Welcome to A Free Disputation Against Pretended Liberty of Conscience by Samuel Rutherford. We are continuing to read at chapter 25 for this reading. This Reformation audio resource is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. Many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalog containing classic and contemporary Puritan Reform books, CDs, and much more at great discounts, are on the web at www.swrb.com. Also, please consider, pray, and act upon the important truths found in the following quotation by Charles Spurgeon, quote, "As the Apostle says to Timothy, so also he says to everyone, give yourself to reading. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read. Renounce as much as you will, all light literature, but study as much as possible sound theological works, especially the Puritanic writers, and expositions of the Bible. The best way for you to spend your leisure is to be either reading or praying," unquote. And now to SWRB's reading of A Free Disputation Against Pretended Liberty of Conscience by Samuel Rutherford, which we hope you find to be a great blessing, and which we pray draws you nearer to the Lord Jesus Christ, for he is the way, the truth, and the life, and no man cometh unto the Father but by him. John chapter 14, verse 6. Chapter 25. Chapter 25, whether the rulers by their office and order to peace are to stand to the laws of Moses for punishing seducing teachers. Judicial laws may be judicial and Mosaic, and so not obligatory to us, according to the degree and quality of punishment, such as is Deuteronomy 13, the destroying the city and devoting all therein to a curse. We may not do the like in the like degree of punishment to all that receive and defend idolaters and blasphemers in their city. And yet that some punishment by the sword be inflicted upon such a city is of perpetual obligation, because the magistrate bears the sword to take vengeance on ill-doers, and so on these that are partakers of his ill-deeds, who brings another gospel. 2 John chapter 5, verse 10. Number 2, though Saul's destroying of the Amalekites in that cause was moral, in regard they lay in wait for Israel when they came out of Egypt, and so of perpetual obligation, yet the destroying of them, 1 Samuel 15, is temporary, and obligeth not us. Number 1, because that generation were their sons, not those same persons that oppressed Israel when they came out of Egypt, and we may not punish the sons for the sins of their fathers with death. Therefore God's positive command to Saul, and the reason I remember what Amalek did in Moses his time, therefore kill them, does not oblige us, except we had the like command. Number 2, because the slaying of a man, woman, infant, and suckling, ox and sheep, was temporary, and cannot have a perpetually obligatory ground in the law of nature or natural justice obliging us. Number 3, where there is an injury done to God against Father and against our brethren in drawing them from serving the true God, and a punishment commanded by God to be inflicted once, that punishment or the like in substance and nature must ever be such as obligeth us in the like cases. The learned professors and laymen say they can see no reason but it must oblige under the New Testament. I confess, when the fault is ceremonial, though the punishment be real, as the cutting off of an infant not circumcised and some punishment inflicted on the leper, it is not reason the law should oblige us in the New Testament either as touching punishment or degree, because these punishments for typical faults are ordained to teach rather than to be punishments, and the magistrate by no light of nature could make laws against unbaptized infants. Number 4, no man but sees the punishment of theft is of common moral equity and obligeth all nations. But the manner or degree of punishment is more positive, as to punish theft by restoring 4 ox for the stealing of 1 ox, doth not to oblige all nations, but some other bully punishment, as whipping, may be used against thieves. Mr. Joe Weems, Volume 3, CA period 38 of the Judicial Law, "The determination, saith he, in Moses' law judicial was divini juris, and they had greater force to bind the sons than any municipal laws had to bind subjects now, in regard they were given by God himself. Yet these judicial laws he commanded the outward man, whereas the moral law, called Hebrew, Ignia Lex, Deuteronomy 33, this fiery law pierceth the heart. Gamachius saith, judicials and ceremonials are immediately deduced out of the principles of the law of nature, by way of a more remote and obscure conclusion. Aquinas saith, by way of divine determination. But the truth is, the proposition might have some ground in the law of nature, but why 39 stripes, not 40, not 38, only should be inflicted on such an evildoer, and the assumption in many judicial laws seem to be an act of the mere positive will of God. Therefore Aquinas saith, ceremonials primo and per se, first and chiefly, were ordained to signify things, but judicials secondario did signify things to come. And Suarez saith, that judicials accessorily and by accident did signify things. It is true, Corinthus, as Epiphanius and Jerome saith, and the Ebionites, as Irenaeus saith, and the Nazarene, as Augustine tells us, hold that ceremonials and judicials do yet oblige. Schoolmen deny their obligation. As Soto, Aquinas, Medina, Valentia, Gamachius, because the priesthood is changed. Yet let not us go on with Egid Conic to say that if it was lawful to make war with any nation for wrongs done to men, how much more for injuries done to God? For making a war is an act of magistracy, and so suppose some thus. Some power and authority that we have either by the law of nature to defend our life, peace, liberties, or the avenging of such heinous injuries done to the nation as cannot in justice be decided but by a sword, so that sin is sin, or as greatest sins are not the just cause of war, but sins as most destructive to human society, for which by the principles of the law of nature they may be convinced of fearful breaches. Now these that are idolaters, the nations that worship God in idolatrous way, and being of a strange religion, worship a strange God, though they do the greatest injury to God that can be, yet in regard they being other nations as independent on us, as we are on them, and do it not in order to the destruction of our peace, liberty, and life. We have not just over them, nor authority to make war with them, except God gave us a command to destroy them, nor is it a good consequence. We may by war revenge injuries done to men, ergo far more by war revenge injuries done to God. For war is an act of revenging justice that supposes some authority given of God over such a nation as we come out against in war. Number two, every just war is some way defensive in regard. Every act of magistracy is an act of defending of the peace, life, and liberty of the society. Men thereof and a propulsion violence by violence, and this is the intrinsic end of magistracy, to hold off unjust violence by just and harmless violence. For if the life of a murderer be not taken away by the sword of a magistrate, he will still take life of another man. Latin phrase, he that is once wicked is still presumed to be wicked, except his wickedness be restrained. And to offend a nation or person that hath not offended us must be unjust violence and unlawful war, and to make war against a nation that worshipped a strange God and injured God and not us supposeth that we must instruct them of a wrong done to God by teaching them and instructing them in the true religion. For to play worship the work in the men's hands and worship Satan, some Indians do, and so by their own conscience may be convinced, and so are inexcusable in sorrow day before God's tribunal. Yet are they not so inexcusable in sorrow humano before man's tribunal, as we can make war against them till we inform and instruct them positively of the true religion. But they that shed our blood and invade our peace and liberties are by the law of nature convinced, and by demand of reparation made to them, quickly silenced and not to be instructed in their hearts. But it may be said, what if that nation will not be informed of the true religion and will go on contumaciously to dishonor God and reproach the true God? Shall we not, upon a mere quarrel for religion, make war against them and avenge the injuries done to God and defend his truth? No less than with the sword we defend our own lives and liberties. I answer, there is not the like reason, for God and nature given to the strongest adjust and authority over oppressors to repel unjust violence with innocent violence, but that we should force the true religion on idolaters, we have not the like ground, except they did attempt to obtrude their false ways upon us and injure our souls. For there is a vast difference between a people never receiving the true religion and a people who have embraced and submitted to laws that have enacted the profession of the true religion. Those that never profess the true religion cannot be compelled to receive it by the sword of another nation, except they first subdue them in a just war and be masters of them, and that they may educate the posterity of the subdued people and discharge the duty of parents to them, and impose laws on themselves to cast away the idols of their father's house, and to learn the knowledge of the true God. But they cannot make the not receiving of the true religion the ground of a war, for we read not of any such cause of war in the Scripture. It is true, God did command his people to destroy the Canaanites, but idolatry was not the quarrel. Joshua 11, verse 19, there was not a nation that made peace with the children of Israel, save the Hittites, the inhabitants of Gib. On all other they took in battle. For it was of the Lord to harden their heart, that they should come against Israel in battle, that he might destroy them utterly, and that they might have no favor, but that he might destroy them, as the Lord commanded Moses. And those that they subdued in the wilderness denied them harmless passage through their land. It is true, some popish writers, as Massius, Cornelius, Lapide, Abulensis, say if the Canaanites would have sought peace and embraced the worship of the true God, the Israelites would not have destroyed them, but the text, Calvin, and famous papists as Cajetanus, Suarez, Gamachius, and Augustine before them, say plainly Israel made war against them, and Israel but defended themselves against the Canaanites. Libertines say the teaching of the gospel, Matthew 28, and not the sword, is a means to spread the gospel, so say we. I see no warrant we have to obtrude the gospel and the purity thereof upon papists in France and Ireland, but we may lawfully avenge the blood of the people of God on Irish murderers who exercise extreme cruelty and tyranny over persons and the consciences of the martyrs and the oppressed people of God among the papists. The question seems harder when these of a false religion, in regard of their nearness and vicinity to a kingdom professing the true religion, when as they may infect them, or if they be in one national covenant and under the oath of God to endeavor the extirpation of all false religions and what is contrary to sound doctrine, it is certain the kingdom of Judah might justly have avenged the apostasy of the 10 tribes from David's house and from Jerusalem, where the Lord had set his name for the worshipping of the golden calves, if the Lord by his prophet had not expressly forbidden them to fight against their brethren, 1 Kings 12. And the children of Israel did justly attempt war against the 2.5 tribes, because they erected a new altar for worship, as they conceived, which was apostasy from the covenant of God and the true religion, which they were to maintain by the oath of Joshua, chapter 22, verses 12, 13, 15, and 16. And to bring the wrath of God on all the tribes as Achan did in verse 20, no doubt, saith Calvin on the place, they were angry with an holy zeal, for, saith he on verse 12, the sword is not given to every man in his hand, but every one according to his calling ought by this place manifestly and constantly to defend the true religion. And if the wrath of God came on all the people, saith Calvin, for the secret sin of one man, much more the people shall not go unpunished, if they dissemble the manifest idolatry of many. Piscator saith it was piety in the tribes that they resolved to make war with the 2.5 tribes for their defection from the true God. Such was their zeal, say the divines of England, that they would rather hazard their lives than suffer God's true religion to be corrupted, for God had ordained there should be but one place for public service and sacrifices and but one altar. Leviticus chapter 17, verses 8 and 9, Deuteronomy chapter 12, verses 5, 7, 13, and 27, Exodus chapter 20, verse 24, and Deuteronomy chapter 27, verse 5, for they were all in covenant with one God, and this was a schism and an apostasy from the church, saith Diodot, in which alone is the true service of God and the participation of his grace and covenant. So also the Geneva Notes proves the lawfulness of the war and the Dutch annotations. To this accord also popish writers on the place as Fatibulus, Cajetanus, Cornelius, Lapide, who commend this zeal and say all the 12 tribes made but one state and one church, and Tostatus saith there was a necessary of making war with the two tribes because the law commanded it, Deuteronomy 13. Therefore they took not counsel whither they should make war, but they consulted touching the matter. So agreeth Hugo Cardinalis, so Messias, so Serrarius, Lyra saith, war should not be undertaken but upon a certain and just cause, especially against friends. Therefore they send messengers to the two tribes to try the cause of the new altar. Menochius, out of zeal, they sent messengers to try the crime of idolatry, and to bring them to repentance, if not to make destructive war against them. And Pharus, they were ready, if the two tribes obeyed not, armis discerne, to decide the matter by war. Would God, saith he, there were such zeal in us, and we see not one altar erected, but a number of superstitious altars. From this place it is clear, when a kingdom king united together, federate by the oath of God, one just and become an ecclesiastical body, so as whole may challenge any part that maketh affection and labor to gain them, and if they contumaciously resist, they are with the sword to decide the matter, lest wrath from the Lord break out on the whole confederate body. As for the sin of one Achan, wrath came upon all Israel, nor can I well see what can be answered on the trade that war for the new altar was undertaken upon temporary warrants, which do not assume the New Testament. But this is said, not proved, that new altar was not a heap of stones, but if it had been made upon religious grounds and for the service of God, it had been no less than an apostasy from the true religion once delivered by God. Then if the third part of Scotland and England should turn apostates from the religion once sworn after they had bound themselves in covenant, the question remaineth, what should the state and parliament do in that case? Should they be indifferent beholders and not use the sword against such apostates? Suarez and others, not without reason, think that infidels that are subjects and not apostates cannot be compelled to embrace the truth, even though it be sufficiently proposed to them. His reasons are, there is no lawful power given to the church by Jesus Christ to compel such. Number two, it is no tradition of the church. Three, those that are without cannot be judged. But the truth is, the sword is not given to the church as a church. In the spreading of the gospel, the Lord forbids the use of the sword. It is true, a Christian prince may deny to infidels liberty to dwell in bounds. See Weems in Volume 3, Exposition of the Judicial Law, Cap 15. And subjects may be compelled not to blaspheme Christ, not to dishonor through God with manifestly professed impieties. For if Asa made a law in 2 Chronicles 15, that they that would not seek the true God should be put to death, if that be temporary and judicial, the Christian magistrate is not as a Christian magistrate or as a nurse father in Isaiah chapter 49 verse 23, so much as to command any to serve Christ nor to rebuke any for blasphemies. Sure, this can be no part of the peaceableness of Christ's kingdom, not to rebuke sinners, but nurse fathers and civil tutors must do something for them errors. For Constantine the Great goes to temples of heathen gods to the end that heathenish idolatry might be abolished, as Eusebius saith. See also Rufinus, Jovianus, and Nicephorus. Justinian made many laws against idolaters before Constantine the Great would pardon Arius. He enacted an oath of him that he should stand to the Nicene faith, and he sware but dissembled. So Socrates, then Arius, was punishable by the emperor. So Timotheus Colon, bishop of Constantinople under Anastasius, first emperor, as Eutychian, and cursed such as rejected the Chalcedon, and before the emperor for such as approved the Synod of Chalcedon. So Theod Agnasnostus, Petrus Mongus, bishop of Alexandria under Zonin, the emperor, was and Eutychian, then again Orthodox. A little after, he rejected the Council of Chalcedon. A little after, in an epistle to Anicetus, bishop of Alexandria, he professed the sound faith, and denied that he rejected the Council of Chalcedon. Again, he rejects that council and the sound faith. Therefore, Evagrius tells him, a shoe for every foot, a turncoat, and a time server. Ergo, such heretics, beside that they have not been innocent and godly, as Arminians say, they feared the sword of the magistrate, but as touching the practice of emperors and the imperial laws for ratifying church constitutions, there be but too many of them. As also for gathering councils, which proveth the coactive power of princes, kings, and emperors over heretics and seducing teachers, Constantius, I grant, made a law that some godly men should be tolerated, ut parem cum fidelibus ige qui erant. He saith not heretics, passus est quietus frutonum gaudentis accipient, Eusebius in vita constant. And though the emperor Grotian decreed vi quam quisque valet religionem sequer renter, that all religions should be free, he had much ado in wars with the Goths, who wasted Thracia, and was therefore careful that Ambrose should drop a short confession. Yet did he accept from the toleration the Manichees, the Phocinians, the Eunomians, but see, codis prime lege, cuncost papos de sum trinit, Martianus I bid lege, number 4, synod, Chalcedo, Leo Imperator, cons 15, c. const 17, Heraclius Imperator, const 1, de fide Justinius, novellus 123, c. period 32, novell 137, c. period 6, honoris 1, period 4, c. period 55, Ecclesia Valentinianus 1, 9 const 87, novell 131, c. period 4, Eusebius Pamphil de Vita const 1, period 3, c. period 13, Sirius Otum 2, consul, c. period 20, page 362, codic 1, period 1, period tite, period de heret, period lex 2, period 1, comma 6, period Justinian Codex, 1, period 1, period tite, period 4, period de sum, period trent lex 2, period Sirius consul tom, period 2, period page 469, 421, comma 494, and tom, period 2, period page 668, 669, 670, Socra Scholastic, his, period 1, period A, period C, 37, Nicephor, hist, period 1, period 9, period C, period 4, period Contour, period Magdeburg, semicolon 4, period Cole, period 558, so for his power to convene councils as the Nicene by Constani, Eusib, period 1, period 3, period C, period 6, period Sozome, comma 1, period 1, period C, period 17, Sorat, period 1, period 1, period C, period 6, period Rus, period 1, period 10, period C, period 1, period Theodore, 1, period 1, period C, period 4, period 1, period Sozome, period 1, period 1, period C, period 9, period Theodosius, elder, made a law of death against the Anabaptists and banished Eunomius, Socrat, period 1, period 7, period C, period 12. It is true, Constantinus and Licinius, as Eusebius tells us, 10, period C, period 5, say in a law, now therefore we freely will and command that every man have a free liberty to observe the Christian religion, and that without any grief or molestation he may be suffered to do the same, but the practice of heathen emperors is no rule. Number 2, God opened their hearts to make these laws in favor of Christians. 3, they had experience of the favor of God by the prayers of Christians. 4, the heathen law in the letter would prove that none should be rebuked or argued against, whatever religion he chose. Maximus proclaimed that all men should use what religion they like best. Use, period, 1, period 9, period C, period 10, period. But number 1, Maximus, out of natural pity because he had before persecuted Christians, did this. 2, Diocletian and Maximinus took churches from them. He restored them. Hence followed peace till Anne 130, the Council of Constantinople, number 1, by Theodosius Senior, Theodoret, 1, period 5, C, period 7, Socrates, 1, period 5, period C, period 8, period, the Council of Ephesus, 1, period, by Theodos Junior, Evagrius, 1, period I, period C, period 2, period, so Imperator Justinus, 1, period 44, period Ad Manans Patriarchum, De Monachis and Monasteris Separandis and De Apis period and Clear period Eusebius De Vita Cons 1 period 3 period C period 25 period Epistolem Libella ad Synoda Constitutionum. The bishops of the second general council, if there was any of them general, wrote to the emperor Theodosius, "We desire your clemency, that you, by your letters, would confirm the decrees of the Council of Chalcedon, and command that it be ratified and established," which he did. See also Constantius, his power, prescribing to the councils of Ariminum and Seleucia the subject matter they should treat upon, and commanded 10 of each council to come and give him account of their proceedings. Sozomen, 1 period 4 period C period 6 period Docius and Valentine command the Council of Ephesus to send them some bishops to acquaint them with the causes and motives of their deliberations. Relatio Synodi Ephesine quae est tom period 1 period consul period. The second council of Nice, which some call the seventh general council, relate the like to the emperor at Constantinople. Theodoret, 1 period 5 period C period 8 period Zonoros, Tom period 3 period Anat period. There be two edicts of the emperors, Valentinian and Martian, confirming the Council of Chalcedon. So Act 3 period Calc period 2 1 period Cons period. All which say the emperors de facto commanded as magistrates, churchmen, to determine according to the word, and corrected such as contravened, and though Picus Mirandula saith well, no man hath power of opinion, so as if he will, he may have another opinion, which though it may bear, that opinions fall not under free will, yet the venting of them to others is to Mirandula a free act and punishable. We know the edict of Valentinian and Martian of capital punishment against such as shall attempt to teach things unlawful. Let false teachers, according to Justinian, have no leave to live and dwell in Roman bounds, saith Pamatius. Augustine saith, heretics kill souls, let them be afflicted in body. They bring on men death eternal, and they complain that they suffer temporal death. And why, saith Augustine, should sorcerers find the rigor of the law from emperors when heretics and schismatics go free? Constantius gave out edicts against heretics, as Eusebius saith in B period 2 period C period 27, and Mulks against them. Honorius made laws against Donatists of sinning and of banishing preachers of Donatism. Martianus did the like. The like saith Nazians of Theodosius the Great, banishment and other punishment. The emperors inflicted upon Arius, Macedonius, Nestorius, Eutyches, and their followers, which the Archbishop of Spalato, M. period de Dominus, granteth, though he says Augustine accepteth capital punishment, for such, saith he will not have to be inflicted, for the conscience, which is a manifest depraving of the mind of Augustine, who will have such punishment according to the quality of the fault inflicted on them, as upon sorcerers and murderers. Let Augustine be considered in these and other places after he retracted his too meek sentence, that they should not be punished at all. Alexander Alexandrinus saith Arius and his followers ought to be punished with excommunication and a curse. Theodoret, LIB, period 1, period C, period 4, period, but for the point in hand, the Christian magistrate is tied and obliged to these punishments, to be inflicted for moral offenses that the law of God hath ordained, at least in nature I prove. 1. That which is moral and cannot be determined by the wisdom and will of man must be determined by the field that was of our brother and makes him twofold more the child of Satan than before, is moral and cannot be determined by the wisdom and will of man, ergo Such a punishing of a seducing prophet must be by the revealed will of God in his word. The proposition is proved, one, because God only, not Moses, nor any other lawgiver under him, taketh on him to determine death to be the adulterer's punishment in Leviticus chapter 20, verse 10, and the same he determineth to be the punishment of a willful murder, Exodus 21, verse 12, of smiting of the father or mother, in verse 15, of man-stealing, verse 16, of sorcery, Exodus 22, verse 18, of bestiality, 19, of sacrificing to a strange god, verse 10. And upon the same reason, God only, not any mortal man, must determine the punishment due to such as seduce souls to eternal perdition. For what reason can be imagined why God can be the only determiner of such a punishment of killing, and not for the ruining the soul, and making him the child of perdition? Let not any say by this reason to tempt to any sin, by any evil counsel or provocation to a moderate anger or envy, should deserve death, for every tempting to sin is a ruining of the soul, of such as we give bad counsel unto and tempt to sin. Answer, if we do so tempt them by a sinful way, as a sinful injuring and railing on them, or by a wicked course, it is sure it doth deserve punishment by the magistrate, but the act of so counseling and tempting to sin, though ex conditione operis, it be soul ruin, yet it is not such as deserves death. Otherwise, killing, adultery, sorcery, bestiality, tempt also to sin and soul ruin, besides the other injury in them, against the life and chastity of men. 2. The proposition is proved, because the will of God can be the creator and first author of nothing, but which is morally good. For the Scripture is as full in the duties of the second table touching mercy and righteousness, as in the duties of the first touching piety and religion, and anything pretended to be moral hath God for its author in either the first or the second table of the law. Nor can the will of man be the author of anything morally good, and will righteousness is as unlawful as will worship or will piety, since the word is a perfect rule in matters of doctrine or faith or of life, manners and conversation, and teacheth the judge what he should do, Deuteronomy 17, verse 18, 19, and 20, Psalm 119, verse 9, Psalm 19, verse 8 and 9, Proverbs 3, verse 21, 22, and 23, etc. 3. Whatever, by order of justice, doth concern the life and death of our neighbor, rewarding or punishing him in name, body, goods, so as if it be justly inflicted, it is justice, and if unduly and undeservedly, it is injustice and murder, as wronging of him in his body by stripes, wounding, death, in his liberty by prison, in his goods by fines, that must be determined in the word by him that is Lord of life, death, liberty, of our name and goods. Other ways the word should not teach us when the judge sins, when not, when he makes just laws, when unjust, when he exceeds in punishing, when he is deficient. I come to the assumption the punishing of a seducing prophet is moral, in that it is commanded to father and mother not to pity him, Deuteronomy 13, verse 6, held forth as the zeal of God in father and mother under the Messiah's kingdom, Zechariah 13, verses 1, 2, and 3, 4, 5, and 6. And everyone is forbidden to bid him Godspeed, yea, and commanded to deny him an act of humanity and hospitality and not receive him in his house, 2 John 1. If we be commanded to put any shame on him, far more must the ruler be taught of God what shame he should put on him. For whatever under the New Testament is capable of a command is moral, and if moral, what the magistrate should do to him can no more be determined by the will and wit of man than it can be determined what punishment the magistrate must inflict upon the murderer, the adulterer, the sorcerer, the sodomite, which all the wisdom of God hath determined in the word. Otherwise God hath left the magistrate in the dark, that from the word he hath no direction when he commits murder, or when he doth acts of justice, and that it is a moral act also to seduce souls is clear in that, number one, we are commanded to beware of such, Matthew 7, verse 5, and avoid them, Titus 3, verse 10, Romans 16, verse 17, Number two, that the Lord condemns them in his word as such as make their followers the children of perdition, yea, Matthew 22, verse 15. They subvert the hearers, their word eats as a canker, 2 Timothy 2, 15 and 17. Lead silly women captive, 2 Timothy 3, are deceivers, Titus 1, 10. Now that God hath appointed a punishment for this of old, and hath spoken against this sin so much in the New Testament, and bidden private Christians cry shame on seducers and fly them, and yet left the magistrate under discharge and inhibition to draw a sword against such, who can believe it, except that inhibition given to the Christian magistrate were written in the testament of our Lord. To say the New Testament dispensation is so spiritual that God will have no remedying of seducing but by the spiritual armor of the Word is said without ground. When the New Testament dispensation is as spiritual to gain the sorcerer, the thief, the sodomite, the drunkard, the reviler, as the idolater by the spiritual armor of the Word, Acts 19:19, 1 Corinthians 6:9-11, and by this reason the magistrate may draw the sword against none of these, sodomite, drunkard, sorcerer, contrary to Romans chapter 13, verses 1-6, and 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 14. Especially since the magistrate is not indifferent towards ill-doers and well-doers, since he must punish the one as a nurse father, praise and reward the other, 1 Timothy 2:14. Gaining of souls is well-doing, Matthew chapter 25, verses 21 and 23. And seducing of souls is by the law of nature and nations the worst of injuries done to men. Number two, argument. That which is perpetually moral and one act of justice at all times and places must oblige us Christians and the Christian magistrate as well as the Jewish rulers. But to punish the seducing prophet is perpetually moral and an act of justice at all times and in all places, as the rewarding of such as teach truth is a commendable act of justice. Ergo, the proposition is clear in regard the moral law doth therefore oblige us Christians, because it is morally perpetual and perpetually moral, and that in all times and places, as to serve God, honor our parents, not to murder, etc., is perpetually moral now, as among Jews with us, as among the Indians and Tartarians, but to punish the seducing prophet is such. Number one, because the heretic is condemned by his own conscience, Titus chapter 3, verse 10, in believing lies. Ergo, far more by his own conscience, by leading others into that same condemnation with himself. And if he apprehend the vengeance of a Godhead, there must be a conscience naturally apprehending such, as we see the conscience of murderers and of Cain fear some revenging hand. If therefore the minister of God, the magistrate, inflict this, it must be nothing else but an act of natural justice, which the natural conscience doth apprehend. But what acts of justice the conscience naturally fears must be acts of justice perpetually moral, not respecting one man or nation more than another. Two, all countries by an instinct apprehend a God and conceive their priests and prophets are to be entertained and rewarded, as Genesis 47:22, Midian, Exodus 2:16, Exodus 18:1, Judges 17:5, and chapter 18:4, 2 Kings 15:18, the Philistines, 1 Samuel 5:5, and chapter 6:2, Baal and the Zidim had their priests, 2 Kings 10:18-19, Lycaonia, Acts 14:13. If the rulers feed their priests, the false prophets and priests deceive them and mislead them, they must punish. So the king of Babylon roasted in a fire two false prophets, Jeremiah 29:21-22, and it is clear that Jeremiah argues not from any judicial law when he saith, the prophets that lies in the name of the Lord shall die sword, chapter 14:14-15. It was by the sword of the Deans, who had nothing but the law of nature, that they perished, for no judicial law of God taught them that he ought to die by the sword of the magistrate who speaks lies in the name of the Lord. Whereas the Chaldeans, knowing that Jeremiah had prophesied truth and was sent of God, they entreated him well, as the Lord had foretold, Jeremiah 15:8. nor can it be said that a consequence is null, obliged to magistrates, which have no better warrant than the practices of heathens, for they persecuted the true prophets and also that spake in the name of the Lord. Herod beheaded James, Act 12, and apprehended Peter, persecuted Paul, and Domitian confined John to the Isle of Patmos for God. Through which I answer, the argument is not drawn simply from the fact of heathen, but from the light of nature that teacheth all magistrates, heathen and Christian, to public impostors, false prophets, liars, as most pernicious means to the peace of all societies. The love of nature to all societies that deceivers and such as raise false reports and lies upon earthly should be punished. Far more, the principle of the law of nature that liars and such as be lies in the Lord and deceive and seduce the souls of father and mother, king and ruler, all ranks in the society, should not be tolerated in the society, and that and what though emperors and kings abuse the power that got them for the truth, persecute the servants for it follows not, but they had just power as ministers of God to punish these well other ill doers by the law of nature and nations. It take is held forth by Job 31:26-8, who being under no judicial law obliged Jews but a Gentile, so in this life the law of nature and nations maketh idolatry and worshipping of the sun and moon to be an iniquity to be punished by the judge, that this is not an iniquity to be punished by God, as if heresy be innocency, as libertines say, it must neither be punished by God nor man, but the truth is clear. For number one, the expression 28 varies only in the number from that which is, verse 11. Now there Job saith of adultery, ips iniquitas judicum, and verse 28, tim hoc inus judicis. The English lines do well observe adultery is a capital crime to be by the judge. Genesis 38:4, Leviticus 20:10, Deuteronomy 20:0, and they expound verse 28 the same way. Pagnin est iniquitus judicanda digna vel judiciaria. Merceris, Exodus 21:2, he shall give according to the judges. Isaiah 16:3, do judgment. Shem laras, Hebrew, judges that August causes. Deuteronomy 31:31, our enemies be judges. Job 11, iniquitus dig nac indiciter and puniter. It is true, the LXX expound it, Greek, and the Chaldean paraphrase, foreign, est enem iniquitus maxima, but it is taken for a crime that comes before an earthly judge. So, Hieronymus and Exodus 21:22, if a man strike a woman with child and she live, he shall give according to the sentence of the judges. Hieronymus quantum arbitri judicaverint, the Chaldean paraphrase, and dabit per sententiam judicum LXX, the Syriac dabit quantum discernet judices, the Samaritan dabit click ex sentia judicum vetablus, Job 31:11, and batali supplicio per sequenda, verse 28, nam and a iniquitus capitali supplicio digna, junia iniquitus a judicibus anima vertenda piscator iniquitus judiciaria cum plutentes iniquitus judicanda penita, in Job 31:28, iniquitus digna judicio judicum sententia severissima and gravissimo supplicio. All agree to this, that idolatry, according to Job, from the law of nature, deserves capital punishment to be inflicted by the judge. And Panita saith, this agreeth with the law of God, especially Deuteronomy 4:25-23. Sanctius gathereth from Job 31:11 that adulterers in Job's time were, by the sentence of the judge, burnt. Now the same expression is verse 28 spoken of idolatry, hence is Socrates condemned to die for his false religion. As is supposed by the people, Maximus condemned the Priscillians, as Hieronymus observes, for heresy, nor is it much to be valued that Jer Taylor saith that Maximus was a tyrant and put to death Catholic heretics. Without choice it proves punishing of heretics, as supposed of old to be warranted by law. Ursatus and Stasius procured at court law to death against Priscillianus and the Nicene Fathers that Arius should be banished. Nor does Spalato cite Tertullian, Cyprian, Lactantius, Hierome, Severus, Sulpicius, Minutius, Hilary, Damascene, Chrysostom, Theophylact, Bernard, for any other purpose, whatever Taylor say on the contrary, but, number one, to prove that forcing of men to relate not to the way of God, which also I teach, for the preaching of the sword is the means of conversion of sinners. Two, that killing is not to be practiced on all heretics. Three, that the law and the sword are not to go without convincing of the conscience by the word of God. Four, that to deliver up godly men to persecuting tyrants because of some errors hath more scandal to cause men to stumble at truth than to make truth victorious. Five, that neither church nor state can judge heart opinions nor punish them, but only professed and taught opinions that are both unnecessary and unsound. Six, that pastors have not the sword to compel to religion. Seven, that nations of other religions are not gained to Christ by the sword, nor can we make war against them, because they are idolaters and follow a false religion, nor was idolatry the ground of the war that Israel raised against the Canaanites and other nations. To all which I add the words of Jer Taylor, the best and ablest doctors in Christendom have been deceived actually in matters of religion, in that all sorts of Christians dissent from the errors of Papias, Irenaeus, Lactantius, Justin Martyr, Cyprian, Firmilian, etc. Ergo, by Taylor's sentence, we are not to rest much upon the fathers, whether they be for or against liberty of conscience. For a course to be taken with pagans, to speak by the way, all that Lactantius, number 1, 5 period C period 20 period, Tertulli ad Scapulum, C period 2, Augustine, Sermon 6, De Verb, Dom, C period 7, Kant, period Light, period Petitian, Lib, period 2, period C period 83, we approve, and what famous schoolmen, Cajetan, Thomas, Bans, Durandus, Paludan, Richardus, Tannerus, Cius, Paluda, and that of us in Sermon 6, De Verb, Dom, C period 7 period, Latin phrase, pagans must be allured and not compelled by wars to the faith, because the just cause of war must either be an open breach of nations against the law of nature, for it must be a sin of which a multitude may easily be or are convinced of, as is clear in the Amalekites and all the nations who invaded Israel, Joshua 11, verses 19 and 20, or then in a visible church it must be for the manifest apostasy from the covenant of God and true religion, as a new altar supposed to be erected by the two tribes and the half against the only one altar commanded by God. See Caver Ruvius in Regnum Pacatum, Part 2, Section 4. Sotus in 4, Distin, period 5, period 4, period 1, Art, period 10, Molina de Justitia, Disp, period 106, and Bans, 11, period G, period 10, period Art, period 11, period, saith that Paul the third defined well that the Western Indians, being capable of life eternal, were true lords of their possessions, and could not be justly deprived thereof. To tolerate Jews openly blaspheming Christ, or to receive them in the commonwealth, cannot be allowed, or to suffer them to have synagogues, in regard they blaspheme the God we are in covenant with, and do no less deny him than Goliath and Sennacherib did. Number two, but simply seduced Jews are to be instructed, for there is a peculiar prophecy touching the Jews, Romans 11, Jeremiah 50, verses 5 and 6, that they shall be brought in to know Christ and believe in him. 3. Argument. that which was a mere judicial law, and not only in no force now as touching any obligation to bodily punishment from the Christian magistrate, is now under the gospel either a sin offensive to human society, or two, no sin but innocency, as some say, or then three, a thing indifferent. If it be a sin offensive to human society and the people of God, to drive them away from the Lord their God, and an abomination that Israel should fear to do in the days of Moses and before Christ came, as is clear in Deuteronomy 13, verse 3 through 11, it must be so now, for since it is not a typical but a moral sin, it is at all times and in all places to us, and now, and to them, and then, an abomination. Ergo, the argument of the Holy Ghost being perpetual, that it is destructive to human society, the Lord must provide the same, or as effectual means for the remedying thereof. But if the Christian magistrate have no place or power to repress such abominations, but Israel may seduce men after false gods and not fear the stroke of his sword, then hath the Lord left the church to the lust of ravenous wolves that destroy the flock, and hath left these wolves to the Lord's immediate hand of judgment. For rebukes, church censures, are not to be used against them, upon the same ground that the sword should not be drawn against them by the ground of libertines, for rebukes and church censures do. Number one, for the conscience no less than the sword. Two, they beget hypocrites. Three, are as contrary to the law of meekness and gentleness of Christ and his servants, who used no such way to gain the Samaritans and other gainsayers, as the sword is repugnant to Christ's meek administration, who did not use either sword, crying, rebukes, or excommunication against broken reeds. Though both these may be used against seducers in great gentleness and tenderness toward their souls, by fathers in state or church, for they are no less against liberty of prophesying, believing with a reserve to believe the contrary, than the sword. For how can we, in the name of the Lord, rebuke, threaten eternal wrath, deliver to Satan seducers more than the magistrate can use the sword against them? Yea, or refute their errors in the name and authority of Christ, or strike with his rod, since we are not infallibly persuaded more than these we call seducers, for they may, upon the same grounds, call us seducers, threaten us with eternal wrath, and deliver us to Satan in the same name and authority that the sound church proceedeth against them. For neither side had the infallibility of divine authority in a reflex knowledge more than others, by the doctrine of libertines. 5. They are no less contrary to growing up in knowledge and new light, for contrary reasons and rebukes and threatenings are as apt to expel new light and to reduce the seducer to old darkness, for any certainty of persuasion any of the sides have. For both may see beside their book and dream the moon is made of wax by this way, and instructing of teachers that see but on this, and the yonder side of truth with eyes of flesh, as they say, is as ineffectual a remedy against teachers as the sword. 6. Since the sword and stoning, when used by the Jews in Deuteronomy 13, presupposeth infallibility, what warrant do our lords of license of conscience give us that all the commons and lads and girls that lifted a stone against the seducer had prophetic infallibility, or that every wife to whom her husband might say, "Let us go and follow Baal and Dagon"? For sure, the Zidonians and Philistines are a people taught of God as well as we, was infallible in her knowledge and inerrable. And the husband and erring seducer, according to the principles that masters of license would lead us on. For there must be a response given to all and everyone to believe this is the seducer from the light of Moses' law, else they had no more right to stone the seducer than the seducer to stone them. For as we may err in persecuting true prophets, I hope so did the people kill the prophets and stone them that were sent. Matthew 23, verse 27, and 2 Chronicles 36, 16, they mocked and misused the prophets of God, and did as foully err in persecuting as now we under the gospel. Yet Mr. Goodwin gives to the Jews an infallibility of an oracle to tell them who was the man to be stoned as a seducer, but let him answer these queries. 1. Did the oracle speak immediately to all the actors in the stoning? I think no. Then the oracle spake to the priest only, to Pashur. Then the officers had but the word of Pashur to put Jeremiah in the stocks, and the people had but the priest's word for stoning the man, to query. Were the people infallible in discerning the priest to be a true relator of the mind of God from the oracle? How believed they, then, some lying priests who persecuted the prophets of God? 3. Query. Was the priest infallible in discerning the oracle and relating the mind of God to the people? How then did they say, he is worthy to die? How did Caiaphas say, what need we any more witnesses? We have heard himself blaspheme. 4. Were not the priests, Deuteronomy 17, verse 11, to judge according to the sentence of the law of God delivered to Moses? Was this an immediate oracle of infallibility, such as Bellarmine, Bacchanus, Gretseris, Valentia, Corn, Alapide, ascribed to their Apollo at Rome? I think Mr. Goodwin cannot say that. If he does, I know what to answer to the papists in that. If it was the law and the testimony, as I conceive it was, had not all the people that were to stone the seducing prophet their way of judging the false prophet? If they must not follow him after other gods, and if they must be actors in stoning him, and was not this fallible as well as ours under the New Testament? And therefore, because we are not infallible judging in the heart heretic, we must not draw the sword against him, and I say, nor can we draw the sword of the Spirit against any such. For in the using of the sword of the Spirit, in teaching, refuting, or arguing against heretics, we are not infallible. If this way of people's judging and not listening to the suggestions of a false prophet was infallible, how erred they and slew the true prophets and stoned them that were sent, Matthew 23, verse 27, as well as we may? And why may not we, notwithstanding of our fallibility and actual erring, judge and drive away by the sword devourers of the flock as well as they? 6. If God have left no means under the New Testament but exhorting to suppress the seducer, what shall be said of 2 John 10, who forbids to receive a seducer in our house or bid him Godspeed? Sure, this is some external forcing of the conscience. If we credit libertines, for rather than some seducer lie in the fields in America in winter, he will say he abhors familianism, though he hate all the sound in the faith. Now is not this a greater external power armed against a seducer than if the Holy Ghost had said, if a murderer, a parricide, a sorcerer, a drunkard come to your house, let him not lie in the fields, lodge him, but give him coarse cheer, and no bed to lie on, no fire to warm him. Yet so much is not said in express words for the forcing conscience in the New Testament. Again, for the second member, if to teach what we judge in our conscience to be truth, though most erroneous, be no sin but innocency, yea, if, as Minos Celsus said, it be a token of a good conscience and innocent fear of God, as libertines say, we are to judge no man's heart, and that in a matter of salvation, no man will be so devil-like as to go to hell and lead millions of souls with him, the way being against his conscience. For Jer Taylor saith, it is all one here, whether it be a real truth the seducer holdeth and teacheth, or if he only apprehend it to be a truth, though it be an untruth, and he said, well, according to his way. Now if to teach, I say, what we conceive to be truth, though most false, be no sin but innocency, then the magistrate ought not only not to punish it, but seducers to teach what errors they judge saving truths. And grant me these three, which cannot be denied but by gross Anabaptists. 1. Romans 13, that the magistrate is to reward well-doing. 2. That the workman is worthy of his wages, 1 Timothy 5:18 and verse 19, Matthew 10:10. And 3. That a preaching ministry is necessary under the New Testament, 1 Corinthians 1, verses 16 through 18 and verse 23 and 24. Romans chapter 10, verses 14 through 16. then must it follow of necessity that the Christian magistrates should maintain and pay stipends to all preachers, whether sound and orthodox or heterodox and seducing. For if he withdraw maintenance as a magistrate or any other way, because he judges the preacher to be unsound and a seducer, he taketh upon himself to punish a man for his conscience, when as he hath no infallibility and enforcement of the innocent people, before judge to judge, that both the sound pastor and seducer follow their conscience, whatever the doctrine of either be, orthodox or heterodox, he is judged both followeth his innocent conscience, and in so doing both feareth God and doth well, and by his office he is for the praise and reward of well-doers. And suppose he judge in his conscience that the doctrine of the seducer is error and heresy, yet is he to judge it heresy with a reserve, so as it may be to him the next month sound doctrine, and therefore not to judge otherwise of the seducer than that he followeth the dictates of his conscience. And so as yet he doth not take on him infallibility to judge that the seducer teacheth against the light of his conscience, and therefore is not to punish him, but reward him and pay wages to him, as well to a well-doer. Yea, and whatever ministers teach, since neither they are infallible in teaching the very fundamentals, nor the people that hear infallible in judging, and neither are to believe with the persuasion of faith, and all are to be heard as instructors, for suppose you believe that Christ is God consubstantial with the Father, yet are you to hear Arius preach and to admit a contrary light? If Arius can make the contrary appear to your mind, and Arius preacheth according to, should not be instructed by the seducer, for you are to try his doctrine as well as by the sound teacher, for you have no infallible knowledge who is the seducer or who is the sound teacher by the principles of libertines. The third cannot be said, to wit, that it is indifferent to drive away people from the true God. For it must either be great evil and so punishable, against which we have sufficiently argued. Argument 4, what the magistrate is for prophesied to be under the New Testament, that he must discharge with power given actually, and not by the tie of addition and law with time only. This 4, prophet in 43 and chapter 60, verse 10, Revelation 21, verse 26, to be a nurse father to the church under the New Testament, to keep and guard both tables of the law, and to see that pastors do their duty to minister to the church by his royal power. Yea, when the fountain be opened in David's house, that is under the New Testament, he shall thrust through the false prophet that speaketh lies in the name of the Lord, Zechariah 13, verses 1 through 6, and must confer some royal service to the church, over which they are their father. That all the power that kings have is essentially co-active and in order to rewarding or punishing, Romans 13, verse 3 and 4, therefore they must confer. Piscator saith well, that a prince is called the keeper of the tables of the law of divines. Therefore he is to indicate God's glory in both. He that hath the keeping of two pits, one more horrible and dark, and more malefactors, he must not catch the thief, dutter, the malice, he must court rule, nor say of the penitent anything. When he tells that the mad owes to the true religion, or one probation, for an abnormal admission to the spiritual, 18, from 5, verse 3, protection, whether they be a heart or matter, to afflict, permit, approbation, answer. This is not an abnormation and submission to it is no royal power. Isaiah giveth a pearl and fatherly power to the king in church, but he shall be a near father. Now all he gives to approbation of and submission to truth, more than any trace on church, so Isaiah makes king a father. This author made most son subject to church, such as I deny not, in other consideration that as a nurse father he should approve the truth and submit thereunto, as the church makes him both a father and a son, a commander and a humble submissive obeyer in the same consideration, which is most contradictory and incongruous, for he must speak of him as a ruler, or else he saith nothing. The third thing, which is protection to the true church, is nothing to the purpose, for that he owes to them as subjects, not as they are serving God in the duties of the first table. For the king, by This man can neither command them nor forbid them by his magisterial or coactive power to serve God or not to serve him, in the duties of the first table and by the true church that the king owes protection to. The author meaneth not the church that is in itself sound and true, but the church that seemeth and appeareth so to the conscience of the magistrate, though most erroneous. Now this is the church of seekers and Anabaptists, but suppose the magistrate or commander in war be a familist, a gross Anabaptist, say that the church of Benton say is our path, he acts self-government, that and our Christian synagogues, or oh, and he was forward, such as written by that out of mere kill that was Syrian sense of a history must violence to kinds of men, who for mere religious grants labor to scatter of servants of God, for many of them who are for liberty come into church to the bed, and hear the minister, the discharge is kinds of flock, offense to the meeting of which. Now it is enough to say the minister was anti-Christian, was no true church, whose service such sectaries interrupted, but giving and not granting it, or so, yet are libertines not to offer violence to the conscience of any church true or false, if they be true to their own principles. But this author, being an Anabaptist and a seeker, will say neither wars nor such violence are lawful, but if so, the magistrate then cannot with the sword protect the true church and violence of men who upon mere conscience are assemblies. Number two, to libertines, all churches professing religion, as all churches on earth and Mohammedans not accepted do, must be true churches, for they are not to judge, but that they follow their conscience, and so the magistrate owes protection to them, though their conscience be most erroneous, and even for such as they conceive to be true churches, are not vouched they are such, and so the magistrate gives them as true churches, but only as subjects, the fellow magistrate he owes to false churches, and seeing this is a nurse father by his office and by the places Isaiah 49 verse 23 and chapter 60 verse 10 to bring his glory of protection to the whore of Rome, if they be his subjects, as well as to the New Jerusalem. But sure, the king by these places owes father nursing and magistratical protection to the true church, not to the false, because Isaiah 49:23, number one, the place is clearly of such a church as the Lord can no more forget than a woman cannot have compassion on the fruit of her womb, verse 14 and 15. Number two, such a church, for which shall be enlarged by the incoming of the Gentiles, whose place shall be too narrow for a multitude of sons and daughters begotten by the power of the gospel, though she was a captive removing to and fro, verse 19, 20, and 21. Five, a church that shall lift up a standard to the Gentiles and nations to take in their sons and daughters to fight under Christ's colors as being baptized to the same faith, verse 22. Number six, a church whose spiritual government kings and queens shall obey, licking the dust before them, verse 23. Number seven, a people that wait for the Lord and so shall not be ashamed, verse 23. Now to say that a false church shall have all these glorious privileges needeth no refutation, and they must be stupid who teach that kings are made nurse fathers by this text to Antichrist's kingdom, as if the Lord had the beast and his followers written on the nothings, or that kings, being made nurse fathers to the true church, owe nothing to those that wait on the Lord, but the common protection of subjects which they owe to limbs of Antichrist, Jews, Mohammedans, Indians, who worship the devil, if these be their subjects, is a very pleasant dream and incredible. For the place, Isaiah 60, cries to him that runs and will read, that kings shall minister something to the true church, which they do in no sort to the false church, and it is most evident to the judicious reader that the sucking of the breasts of kings, verse 10 and 16, and the kissing of the son, Psalm 2, must be more than common protection to subjects that are open enemies to Christ and wasters of Zion. Yea, it must be some protection to the church as the church, and to the laws and ordinances of God, in rewarding the well-doers, and conserving the ordinances, and the correcting of wolves, impostors, lying prophets. For if we come to Master William's his way, that the king owes protection from violence to the persons and estates of false worshippers, to those that serve devils, and because they are subjects, then those texts say no more than, "Be glad, Indians, Popish idolaters, Mohammedans, for I will make kings your nurse fathers, and queens your nurse mothers, and kings shall minister unto you, and you shall suck the breasts of kings, and kings shall bring their glory and riches to you." Nor need we prove that the place Isaiah 60 speaks of the true church. Read it, and it's proved. Verse 1, "Arise, shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of the Lord is risen upon thee," etc. Nor is the matter helped to say it is a great favor that the power of the kings who lent their horns to the beast is now lent to the Lamb and his followers for their comfort. For then what power bring the kings to the New Jerusalem but royal power, and what royal power to protect the true church in their persons and estates as they do the false? Is this the breath of the milk of kings and their royal power as nurse fathers, and that power which they bring into the New Jerusalem? When it is the same very power they brought into Babel, and the same horn they lent to the beast, too. The kings lent no royal and paternal power to the true church but what they lent to Babel as yet, nor do they yield any royal power to hold up Christ's throne and maintain his ordinances or convey the sincere milk of the word by their political and coactive power to the church if our adversary's doctrine be received. Again, permission to the false church is proved by Matthew 13:30, "Let the tares grow till harvest. Guliellamus Parasiensis, part 1, Hact de Legibus, page 27, Latin phrase. Calvin Adverse Servitum, numb 597, Latin phrase. Joan A. Chokier in parenthesis ad hereticos, Latin phrase. Beza de Heret pu niendis, page 136, Latin phrase. And 229, Latin phrase. Chrysostom, Hom 47 and Matt, Latin phrase. "How far is Mr. Williams' bloody tenet against all the power of the ministry, or so much as rebuking heretics? For he saith in C. period 28, page 53, thirdly, I have proved that the ministers or messengers of the Lord Jesus ought to let the tares or heretics alone, and to let them live in the world, and neither seek by prayer nor prophecy to pluck them up before the harvest." Enthymius and Theophylact follow Chrysostom, Latin phrase. Jacobus Acontius, Stratage, Satan, 1 period 3 period page 153, Latin phrase, and page 157, Latin phrase. Page 16, number 12, Latin phrase. Philippus Gamachius in 2 period Q period 10 period De Infidel, Q period 13, Latin phrase. Sic Suarez, T-O-M, period De Vero Theo, period Dis, period 18, S-C, period 4, N-U, period 9, S-I-C, August 1, period 3, period Contra Parmen, Cap, period 2, C, period 33, Latin phrase. Nor is it altogether to be condemned that Gregorius 9, period Innocent 4, Paulus 3, Clemens 8 command the Talmudic and Kabbalistic books containing blasphemies against God to be burned in the fire. August Epistle 48 ad Vincent retracts ingenuously his opinion that heretics ought not to be punished. Latin phrase. Theodore Stachius in History Anabab, C period 8 in Notus, page 108. To the compelling of men to religion against their will. that which some object out of Lactantius, that Lactantius doth argue against such as being destitute of the word of God and sound reason, would compel by the sword only men to receive true religion.
This Reformation audio track is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. You are welcome to make copies and give them to those in need. SWRB makes thousands of classic Reformation resources available, free and for sale, in audio, video, and printed formats. It is likely that the sermon or book that you just listened to is also available on cassette or video, or as a printed book or booklet. Our many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalog, containing thousands of classic and contemporary Puritan and Reform books, tapes, and videos at great discounts, is on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, that's EDMONTON, Alberta, abbreviated capital A, capital B, Canada, T6L3T5. You may also request a free printed catalog. And remember that John Calvin, in defending the Reformation's regulative principle of worship, or what is sometimes called the scriptural law of worship, commenting on the words of God, which I commanded them not, neither came into my heart, from his commentary on Jeremiah 7:31, writes, God here cuts off from men every occasion for making evasions, since he condemns by this one phrase, I have not commanded them, whatever the Jews devised. There is then no other argument needed to condemn superstitions than that they are not commanded by God. For when men allow themselves to worship God according to their own fancies, and attend not to his commands, they pervert true religion. And if this principle is adopted by the Papists, all those fictitious modes of worship in which they absurdly exercise themselves would fall to the ground. It is indeed a horrible thing for the Papists to seek to discharge their duties towards God by performing their own superstitions. There is an immense number of them, as it is well known, and as it manifestly appears. Were they to admit this principle, that we cannot rightly worship God except by obeying his word, they would be delivered from their deep abyss of error. The prophet's words, then, are very important, when he says that God had commanded no such thing, and that it never came to his mind, as though he had said that men assume too much wisdom when they devise what he never required, nay, what he never knew.